In 1801, he had written to the U.S. minister in France, "We believe the practice of seizing what is called contraband of war is an abusive practice, not founded in natural right. War between two nations cannot diminish the rights of the rest of the world remaining at peace." And this is the central issue, the right of America as a neutral to ship to both sides. And Jefferson believes that given this choice, the world can't hesitate that the American route is the right. However, he considers the observance of these principles as of great importance to the interests of peaceable nations, yet in the present state of things, they are not worth a war, nor do I believe war the most certain means of enforcing them. Those peaceable coercions, which are in the power of every nation, if undertaken in concert and in time of peace, are more likely to produce the desired effect. Well, Jefferson had a chance to finally apply these issues as a result of the expiration of the Jay Treaty in 1805. With war breaking out on the continent, the British decide to outlaw American re-exportation, which is to say, American ships would take goods from enemy colonies, those of Spain and France, and re-export them or export them to Europe. And Britain decided it would no longer allow that. In fact, his diplomats, Monroe and Pinckney, get this right to re-export in a treaty from Britain. But Jefferson refuses to submit it to the Congress, ostensibly because it doesn't deal with the issue of impressment, but in part because Jefferson is still hostile to the British. Finally, on June 22, 1807, the USS Chesapeake is fired on by the HMS Leopard, which is looking for deserters to impress. On November 11th, the British orders in council, like Napoleon's Berlin decrees, now ban all neutral shipping. Jefferson retaliates with the embargo. Now, I want briefly to lay out some of the consequences of the embargo, because just like his wartime governorship, it will result in Jefferson's leaving office in less than desirable circumstances. It causes a financial and commercial depression throughout the North. Hard-hit urban areas have record-high unemployment. There are over 30,000 mariners alone unemployed. A British observer in New York notes, in the month of May 1808 alone, over 80 bankruptcies, hundreds of debtors in prison, and thousands unemployed. Farm prices drop, cash disappears, and farmers can't pay their mortgages. And as a result, Jefferson begins to get a reputation as not only repressive, but a little bit loony. And it ends his presidency on a down note. However, there are a series of very important issues and civil liberties raised by these embargo acts. The first act simply states that United States vessels can't go to foreign ports. Foreign vessels can't take cargo from the United States. Very quickly, Jefferson discovers that there's resistance to this and responds by redoubling his efforts against smuggling. On January 8, 1808, he makes coastal shippers post bond, which is to say people shipping from one city to another. This bond is double the value of both cargo and craft. It is an incredibly expensive proposition, and he increases the penalties for smuggling. On March 12th, the penalties are increased further, and the embargo now covers all exportations by land because people in upstate New York are shipping goods right across the border into Canada. On April 25th, 1808, another act is passed, the Fourth Embargo Act, which allows collectors to search and seize, on suspicion, all coastal shippers. They don't require warrants, and they don't require any due process. On April 19th, Jefferson declares an insurrection in upstate New York. His Attorney General, Albert Gallatin, sends in the army. The towns denounce it as a military despotism. That army will remain in control of the region throughout the rest of Jefferson's tenure. The Fifth Act, which is passed in 1808, raises the bonds on coastal shipping. Collectors can seize suspicious property not just on the water, but anywhere without due process and without warrant, and the president can use any branch of the military to enforce the acts he wants. Finally, after Madison is elected on December 7, 1808, Thomas Jefferson washes his hands of the affair. He feels that although his term does not expire for a few weeks, or a few months, I should say, the people have spoken, it's no longer his problem. I think when we look at this, we see Jefferson grappling throughout his presidency between the realities he faces and the principles he believes in, and negotiating that difficult conflict is neither easy nor simple.